Hello, this is John Richardson speaking with you from Toronto, Canada. Today is Friday, July the 17th, 2020. Lately, I have seen a number of references to taxation in China, and specifically the idea that China may actually be moving to, well, citizenship-based taxation, something similar perhaps to what the United States has. I've seen this in various publications, including Bloomberg, South China Morning Post, et cetera, et cetera. This is an issue that raised its head about 5 years ago in 2015 as well, when I believe was the New York Times that was reporting that China had moved to citizenship-based taxation. That turned out to be incorrect then, and in my view, it's incorrect now. But in order to make that point, I have a very interesting guest joining me today to discuss this issue. I'd like to introduce to you Dr. Bernard Schneider. Dr. Schneider is an assistant professor in international tax law at the Center for Commercial Law Studies, director of the LLM in Tax Law, and LLM research director. He's the academic director of the Institute of Tax Law at CCLS, and CCLS is graduate law program at Queen Mary University of London. Specifically, he teaches international, U.S., and Chinese taxation. Dr. Schneider wrote his PhD thesis on the development of the Chinese income tax system. His main research interests are in the areas of international and comparative tax law, tax policy and administration, taxation of individuals, tax laws, public law, and the U.S. and Chinese tax systems. Dr. Schneider graduated from the New York University School of Law with a JD and an LLM in taxation. And he holds an MIA from the School of International and Public Affairs at Columbia University and an advanced certificate in China Studies from Columbia University's East Asian Institute. He studied Chinese at the Mandarin Training Center of the National Taiwan Normal University in Taipei and the Capital Normal University in Beijing. He's fully proficient in Mandarin Chinese and read and write traditional and simplified characters. Prior completing his thesis, Dr. Schneider practiced in New York, China, and the United Kingdom, primarily in the areas of international and U.S. taxation. Amazing CV. I became aware of him actually in 2012, where he wrote an amazing paper called The End of Taxation Without End, a New Tax Regime for U.S. Expatriates, published in the University of Virginia Law Review. And this is, frankly, I think the best paper ever done in the area of U.S. citizenship-based taxation. Clearly, he is an ally in terms of getting rid of it, and moving to a system of residence-based taxation. I highly recommend the paper to you. And as a result of that particular notoriety, on May 4th, 2014, ACA, meaning American Citizens Abroad, along with the University of Toronto, and other individuals organized a conference on citizenship taxation. The high point was a debate between Dr. Schneider and Michael Kirsch, the University of Notre Dame School of Law. And I will post a link to that, the debate, the discussion, et cetera, along with this podcast. But on another note, leaving aside his qualifications, Dr. Schneider, who I will now call Bernard, frankly, one of the nicest, most decent people I've ever met. Bernard, thanks so much for joining me today. How are you?
Thank you, John. I'm well. It's a pleasure to be here, and you are really too kind in your introduction. You flatter me.
Well, it's all true. It's the simple fact of the matter. Okay, so moving into the topic, as I said in the intro, this is the second time this issue seems to have reared its ugly head. It's amazing to me how quickly people seem to confuse the fact that somehow the Chinese tax regime extends to some of its citizens abroad with equating that with citizenship taxation per se. What are your thoughts and comments on that? First, can I ask you flat out, is it your view China has adopted a system of citizenship-based taxation?
No, absolutely not. There is no indication that I have seen that China taxes its citizens on the basis of citizenship. Without getting too technical, the individual, or at least I hope not getting too technical, the individual income tax law, which was most recently revised in 2018, and the regulations that go with it, make no mention of citizenship. They talk very clearly and very specifically about domicile, which is zhuo in Chinese, or in Mandarin at least. And they talk about residence, which is zhumin, so a resident is a zhumin. But there's no reference to citizenship. There's no reference in the Chinese, which is of course the official version of the law, to gongmin, which would be the mainland Chinese term for citizenship, or for a citizen rather. So that's and that's not something that changed in 2018. The 2018 revision in that regard, amendment in that regard, makes no change to the law that's, you know, been in place for you know, more than 20 years.
Right. So
go ahead.
Well, I looked up the law as well as I could. I can't read Chinese, but I did read what purports to be an official English equivalent. And at the risk of oversimplification, what I think it says is that Chinese tax residency is established either through domicile or by spending more than 183 days a year in China. Have I got that right?
You absolutely do.
That sounds very much like Canada, actually, which, you know, uses the term, I think, ordinary residence instead of domicile, but also has the 183-day test.
And yep. No, you're absolutely right. It is similar to the Canadian understanding of residence. It does not involve citizenship, and it never has. To be fair, I mean, I think you and I are both thinking about some of the articles that have come out in the last week or so on this subject. And to be fair to them, I would say that several of them are unclear, but not strictly speaking incorrect. I mean, it unfortunately, some of them give the impression, because of the way that they've been written, the way they were written, that China taxes on the basis of citizenship. And they refer to what appears to have been a recent push. I say appears because I don't know about it firsthand. You know, I only know about it from the reporting, but I, of course, don't doubt that it's correct, that there's been a push in Hong Kong and in some other places to have mainland Chinese individuals file tax returns and pay tax in the PRC, but the reports don't actually, if you look at them carefully and know the law behind it, they don't actually contradict what we've said, which, you know, what both you and I have just said, which is clearly the law. What seems to be going on is not that China is attempting to tax on the basis of citizenship, but that I think, at least the way I read it, is that what's going on is that it is enforcing the taxation on domicile. Because one of the concepts, or one of the issues with the concept of domicile, as you of course know, John, is that domicile can be sticky, to use a non-technical term, or less sticky. And in principle, Chinese domicile is quite sticky. And domicile, of course, is a topic that appears in Chinese law, as in Canadian law, as in the law of many countries, in more than one context. And as far as I can tell, the definition of domicile is not completely consistent across different areas of Chinese law, although, again, that's not unusual in other jurisdictions. But the concept in China has been fairly sticky, and what I think is going on is that the State Taxation Administration has decided, or is moving towards, actually enforcing taxation on Chinese individuals who it considers to be still domiciled in China, even though they are living in Hong Kong or Singapore or wherever. I think that's what's going on. The fact that the reports refer to individuals working that have been sent over by Chinese companies or working at state-owned enterprises in places like Hong Kong only reinforces that idea, because there's a particularly strong case to make that someone who's just been assigned or seconded outside of China for a few years hasn't really lost their domicile.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. Now, if I could ask you to comment on this issue as well. So it does seem to me to be correct that Chinese domicile is fairly sticky, and I could imagine an awful lot of Chinese domiciliaries being all around the world, whether they're students or whether they're temporarily working. But interestingly, we think a high percentage of these people would also be tax residents of, say, the United States or Canada or whatever country they're in. And I didn't delve into this too deeply, but I looked, for example, at the Chinese-Canada tax treaty, which contains a clear tax residence tiebreaker, where if they become a tax resident of Canada, then they can use, and they're still a tax resident of China because of the domicile provision, it appears to me that they can tiebreak out of Chinese tax residency. Is that consistent with your understanding of this?
No, absolutely. I mean, in many cases it won't matter to the taxpayer for two reasons. One is the one that you mentioned, that depending on their circumstances, even if they are domiciled in China, they may be able to argue under a treaty between China and for example, Canada. China has about 100 tax treaties and agreements, so there are quite a few, and they cover pretty much everywhere that let's say the major destinations for Chinese expatriates. So they could argue, they might be able to argue that they're not actually Chinese residents under a tiebreaker, residence tiebreaker in the treaty. The other reason that it may not matter for many taxpayers is that under the treaty, and actually in fact under domestic Chinese law, they would get a foreign tax credit for taxes paid on foreign source income. So China recognizes under the individual income tax law and the regulations that go along with it, as do, I think, pretty much every jurisdiction on the planet, that the country of source has the first go, so to speak, at taxing the income. So even if the person were considered to be Chinese resident, Chinese tax resident domiciled in China, the fact that he or she is performing work in, for example, Canada, means that Canada gets to tax it first. And given the tax rates in Canada and in China, the odds are that not much would, after the credit, there wouldn't be much tax due in China anyhow. I don't think it's a coincidence that they seem to be going after taxpayers in Hong Kong, and according to some reports, it suggests perhaps Singapore or Singapore is next, because of course those are two very low tax jurisdictions. So even after giving a credit to for the tax paid in Hong Kong, there would still be the difference that China would tax. So that makes for quite a big difference. A situation of someone domiciled or rather working in Hong Kong as opposed to someone working in Canada. The other thing is that just to remind our listener or your listeners, people who are listening to this podcast, that the same operates for a Chinese individual who's living in China and getting some foreign income, right? So still China would recognize the right of the other jurisdiction to tax first. One other point that I wanted to mention. this is really more about the previous point. I mean, there is, I have found some internal regulatory support for this move, or what appears to be this move to go after at least some Chinese individuals abroad for taxes. The reports do seem to be consistent with an announcement that came out from the Ministry of Finance and the State Taxation Administration in January that talks, among other things, about taxation and tax procedure for people who've been sent out of, dispatched is the way the unofficial translation puts it. Beipaichu is the way it's phrased in Chinese. But I think basically what they're talking about is what we would call assigned or seconded employees. And the announcement, or rather the reports in the newspapers, are primarily about that, people who are working in Hong Kong for Chinese companies. So I think we can understand two things from that. One is that maybe they will not go beyond that sort of thing in terms of their enforcement, their sort of stepped up enforcement. The other thing is that is consistent with what we've been saying about what we said earlier about taxation of domiciliaries. And it makes sense, because if you're going to go after expatriates, the easiest group to go after, both in terms of enforcement and in terms of sort of the principle of it, is people who are working for domestic companies, right? So the enforcement is easy because you can just tell the domestic company to withhold, right, or to strongly encourage their employees to cough up, to use the technical term. But also conceptually, it's easy because you can make the argument: listen, you've been assigned for a couple of years to Hong Kong, but you haven't really given up your Chinese domicile, right? You're not even working for a foreign company. So again, this announcement ties in to the report, or the report ties into the announcement, and it also ties in to what we've talked about in terms of the rules in China. And so none of this suggests to me that China's taxing on the basis of citizenship.
I think that's absolutely correct, and I thank you very much for explaining that upside down, sideways, and diagonally. I think a takeaway for people generally, though, is this, that you see consistently, whether it's green card holders moving out of the United States, Americans abroad perhaps moving from New York State, Canadians who decide to move to Bermuda, a lot of people believe that simply by physically leaving a jurisdiction for a year or something like that, that they're severing tax residency. And often nothing is further from the truth. And it seems to me that what's going on in China right now is an example of that. A couple of years ago, there were changes in the South African rules for tax residency as well, which sort of got people thinking, oh my God, they're moving to citizenship-based taxation, which of course was not true. Could I ask you this? We talk about domicile, and domicile, of course, does not have a consistent meaning anywhere. It can mean different things. But in a general sense, what would you think all definitions of domicile have in common? And is there anything that you know specifically about the Chinese definition of domicile that might be pertinent?
Well, you're of course absolutely correct that domicile and physical presence are very different. How tax residence / domicile, because they're not necessarily the same thing, of course, ties into physical presence, or whether it has even a physical presence component. Well, it has a component, but whether physical presence is necessary for tax residents varies from jurisdiction to jurisdiction, as you've sort of just alluded to. The Chinese definition is tied to, among other things, household registration. So you don't need physical presence as far as I can tell, at least, if you maintain your registration in China. And Chinese citizens would normally be required to register the whole hukou system, right? So they would normally be required to be registered somewhere. And my understanding, I mean, I haven't been in practice for a while, but certainly when I was, my understanding was that Chinese are reluctant, Chinese people are reluctant to give up this registration, in part because it's such a hassle to, you know, to reestablish and so on. So this is part of the reason that I say that, at least my understanding is that, in theory, but also in practice, that Chinese domicile is, for tax purposes, is fairly sticky. But as you say, I know cases of people from Canada or from state of New York or elsewhere who go to some lengths to make sure that they've established that they've given up their connection with the jurisdiction, or at least they've done enough so that the tax authority can't come back and say, well, you still have a driver's license, you still have a telephone bills coming to such and such an address or whatever it is.
Right. You know, yesterday I was listening to I was participating in a webinar on these citizenship by investment programs. And at the end of the thing, two or three of the presenters alluded to, the problems of this COVID-19 thing and the need for governments to, get tax revenue. And I think the clear implication was that the rules for tax residency are likely to tighten up a good deal over the years. Is that your sense of this?
It's possible. I mean, well, in fact, what we're discussing, although it seems to predate the spread of coronavirus or of COVID-19, perhaps that's what's going on even with China. I mean, I think in the case of China, just sticking with China for a moment, the move has, I think really does predate whatever, without getting into the question of when coronavirus really started to spread or how early China knew about it. I mean, I think that China signed up to CRS and FATCA in part because it wanted this kind of exchange of information. So the U.S. is interested in that kind of information because it's the only jurisdiction in the world to tax on the basis of citizenship, right? So that's, of course, as you and I both know, and as I'm sure our listeners know, is the driver behind FATCA. But for China, it was about getting financial information, either because they were concerned that people were, being corrupt and sending money out or smuggling money out of the country, but also it would appear, and the thought did occur to me at the time, so to speak, that they would use it to strengthen or to enable enforcement of taxation of domiciliaries. And that indeed seems to be what's going on. Now, whether they'll go, how far they'll go with this and, will they really start chasing students who've been abroad for a year? Well, there's probably not a lot of money in it and so on and so forth. But, you start with the low-hanging fruit and presumably well-paid assignees in a low-tax jurisdiction like Hong Kong or Singapore, where there's a big differential that the Chinese government can actually tax, are the low, are the easy and obvious and rational targets. Moving away from China, yes, it's certainly possible that maybe even likely that the combination of enhanced information through CRS or to the extent that FATCA information becomes somewhat reciprocal on the one hand, and the need for revenue, three hands then, right? So the need for revenue, the information about your citizens, or to be more precise, domiciliaries abroad, people you consider still to be tax resident, you as a jurisdiction consider to be tax resident abroad, who are abroad, and three, possibly a tightening of the definitions of residency, which is to say to make them stickier, would enhance revenue. So the obvious thing is what countries have signed on to, which is CRS and FATCA, to get the information. But another way to expand your revenues, I guess this is a better way to put it, is to fiddle with the definition of residence, right? To make it harder for someone who's leaving the country physically to actually give up their residence for tax purposes. And the U.S. in that sense has the perfect solution, which is, well, unless you give up your passport or your green card, we're going to tax you. Sorry?
That's right. Yeah, you can't. Yeah. You basically, there is no way to escape U.S. tax residence unless you renounce.
Correct. And as we both know, that's precisely what thousands and thousands of people do every year. But that is sort of an extreme move. Many people, for various reasons, understandable reasons, are not willing to do that. Right. I don't think anyone's going to go for citizenship taxation of the kind that the U.S. has. It's the only existing model at the moment, because it's extreme. It's large. Outside the United States, it's considered illegitimate, is probably a little bit too strong, but let's say inappropriate. And also because it is a problem in terms of enforcement. But changing the definition of domicile is easier. Enforcement isn't always easy, but that is something that one could certainly imagine.
Right. Well, that is very interesting. You know, it's funny, this is 2020. In the year 2000, I don't think very many people outside experts like you, perhaps, would even know what the phrase tax residency even meant. Now that we're into the 21st century, for many people, tax residency is the most important issue in their life, interestingly.
Mm. Which is kind of a pity. Sorry, John.
You think it's a pity?
Well, it is a pity in the sense that, it sometimes strikes me, I know I'm a tax person, right? So maybe I shouldn't be saying this, but it sometimes strikes me as the tail wagging the dog. I mean, we should be able to set up our personal arrangements, including where we live, without too much concern for taxation. The fact that people, at least from the U.S., need to give up their citizenship in some cases in order to have a normal life is really there's something wrong about that.
Well, it's good for tax practitioners,
but. And it's interesting from a theoretical point of view, but is that really the way you want to set up your tax system?
No, I don't think it is, and I think it encourages extreme. I think that not only does it encourage non-compliance, but the U.S. tax system is so complicated that people can't even comply when they want to. In many situations, partly because it's not like all Americans are brought or taxed in the same way. It depends, what country they live in, what the treaty is, what are the financial retirement planning programs available in that country. It's a terrible, terrible problem.
No, absolutely.
Tax residence is a big issue. And I would invite you to perhaps tell our listeners what we've got planned for next year.
No, absolutely. We are planning to run a conference on tax residence and domicile and related issues of taxation of individuals in the summer. It'll be hosted by Queen Mary University of London, by the Center for Commercial Law Studies and our Institute of Tax Law specifically. It may well wind up being a virtual conference. I've been on several of those and they can work quite well, so that shouldn't be a problem. But so it may not be physically in London. I think it will be an exciting, very interesting, and also, as you say, increasingly practical, not just academic discussion of what this means and how do you, you know, how do you deal with issues of tax residency? I mean, you're absolutely right that, you know, this is something that nobody really thought about too much, or at least not outside the United States until fairly recently, in part because it just didn't apply to that many people. But that is, you know, that's been changing over the last 20 or 30 years. And I think even with the current situation in terms of COVID-19, the general trend is that you will have more people outside their main countries, so to speak, or the countries of origin for at least part, you know, of their lifetime.
I think that's right. And, you know, on the whole COVID-19 thing, I mean, I never would have predicted this, but after it became clear that a lot of people were unable to travel and a lot of people were, shall we say, involuntarily quarantined in the United States. I mean, there's a whole rash of articles coming from tax practitioners on, oh my God, does this make them U.S. tax residents? Have they met the substantial presence test? You know, this sort of stuff. So, I mean, it's amazing how, you know, I mean, I would have thought, I mean, the pragmatist in me would have thought, oh my God, people would just ignore it, you know, and just continue on. But no, once the genie's out of the bottle and everything is considered in terms of its implications for tax residency, bad things can start to happen. All right.
No, absolutely.
This has been a fantastic discussion. I really am grateful for your joining me today. And again, to be clear, Dr. Schneider's view, certainly my view, but he's the expert on Chinese law, is that no, China has not moved to citizenship-based taxation. I've got that right, Bernard?
You absolutely do, John. Thank you very much. It's been really great being on this podcast with you. Thank you very much for the opportunity. And we'll watch this space, but nothing, certainly in terms of the Chinese approach, suggests that they're moving to citizenship-based taxation. So I look forward to having maybe a discussion about something else. But I think this one we can be confident is not.
We can sleep at night.
If it looks like it does, I'll definitely let you know, John.
Okay, I appreciate that. Well, Bernard, thanks again for joining me, and have a great year in London. Have a great evening. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much. You too. Take care, John.
Bye-bye.